Hey there, Freedom Fighters. My name is Andrew Warner. Guys, how many freaking email marketing companies are out there? Software to send out email. And how could so many of them be doing well? Whew. All right. Joining me today is an entrepreneur who said, I see that there are people sending out email. I see that there's software to do it. I'm jumping in. I'm doing it too. And the reason that he was able to do it, he says, is because he saw a problem that nobody else addressed, because he was dealing with a market that other people weren't familiar with. And he jumped in. Guess what? The guy's doing well. Let me introduce him instead of shouting about him. His name is Redis Lauris. He is the founder of OmniSend. This is the description. This is another thing that all these email marketing guys do now. Omnichannel marketing automation tool for e-commerce. I'm a little concerned, and we'll talk about that, that when you say that, people don't understand that it's email. I almost feel like you need to emphasize that we do email marketing, and by the way, all the other stuff we'll bring it to. All right, we'll talk about why he's doing it that way, and so much more thanks to two phenomenal sponsors who really believe in our success as entrepreneurs and want to support it. The first will help you hire great developers. It's called TopTal, and the second, if you're hosting a website, will help you host it right. It's called HostGator. We are here to help you build better, bigger companies that you could be proud of. And in this interview, we're going to find out how Redis did it. Redis, before I get into all this other stuff, you can see I'm passionate about this. Let's talk revenue. How much revenue are you producing?
Our ARR, which is, we are a SaaS business, so annual recurring revenue is the most important metrics, is a bit above 6 million.
Whoa, this is even bigger than when you talked to our producer.
Yeah, we are growing. So our year over year growth is almost three times. So, therefore, it's bigger than I talked to your producer.
Good. Look, any outside funding?
No, bootstrapped.
But what about this? There's so many freaking email marketing companies out there. There are tons of companies that will do. I listen to NPR. They do an ad for one now. That's how like everyday use it. Why are there so many succeeding?
Because the market, the addressable market, is so big, and email as a channel is so important and so preferred from the people. You know, a lot of researchers show that email is still the most preferred channel for the brands to communicate with people.
Yeah, I get that. I'm sorry to interrupt, but what about this? Look, when it comes to website hosting, the company that's sponsoring me, HostGator, we all know it's part of a bigger company called Endurance. They own just about all these other WordPress hosting companies. So you got them, you got WordPress, you got Squarespace, you got Wix. I could name them in under 10, and the rest are basically dead, unless I'm missing something. But maybe I'm exaggerating with 10, but there aren't that many players. Why is email so different? I have one theory about it, but I'd like to hear what you think.
So that's a good question. So I'm not sure about the historical part of it. So currently, and I know why OmniSend is succeeding, because we have our own niche. And what's happening now in email field, which is not email, it's not the case anymore. Still, it's the massive majority of the messages we send through email, although we have all those other channels in place.
Yeah, we should say Facebook Messenger, I could send messages through. I could send text messages, and I think others, I don't remember.
Web push notifications, WhatsApp messages, Viber messages, and you can synchronize with your Google and Facebook ads. It's all on one tool and all in one place. So far beyond email, but for sure, email is still the most important channel for us and for our customers. And so email is going to verticals. And if like MailChimp was one fits all solution for quite a long time, and like Avib, Constant Contact, all those dinosaurs, giant companies, but email is going to verticals, and there are great solutions as OmniSend who are serving e-commerce. There are other great solutions who are serving, let's say, bloggers, and there are even great solutions who are serving lawyers, specific niche.
Really?
There are some solutions in the market. So, all of those, they're doing pretty well. And so I would say the new trend and reason why OmniSend is still doing well is because we're focusing on the niche, which is by itself, it's growing.
E-commerce.
E-commerce. Yeah. 20-25% annual growth, like globally, for e-commerce businesses in general. It's one thing. Another thing, we are really helping. We are solving the monetizable pain for those businesses, because customer retention is a huge challenge. As you know, acquiring a new customer becomes more and more expensive, like doing it via Facebook or Google ads. They became like insanely expensive of those two companies. technically kind of made a monopoly of customer acquisition channels. So there are no other channels to acquire customers or affordable channels. So start working with customer retention is very, very important. And for e-commerce, email, like if you do it properly, retention marketing done via email generates like 15 to 30% of your revenue. Therefore, it's very important for them to do this. And, you know, we are glad to help and they are glad to pay for us if we provide a good quality service. So
give me an example of what you do differently than, you mentioned MailChimp, so I'll go with them. Let's say somebody has a MailChimp email list. They could send out messages, right? What do you guys do differently because you focus on e-commerce?
Yeah. So starting from, we have a lot of best practices in place made as like ready-made templates, what you can do. So email workflows, email sequences, however you call it. So let's say we know that it's very, very good to remind your customers about abundant carts, about abundant visits, about...
abandoned carts is huge, right? Somebody adds something to their shopping cart, they don't complete the purchase, you send them an email, boom, it comes in. What about follow-on? Somebody gets a receipt for a product they purchased, you also customize the follow-on messages based on what they bought?
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And let's say someone has been buying from you, but you haven't seen the customer for 3 or 4, 6 months, depending on your sales cycle. And we automatically started a campaign to reactivate this customer. You can do a lot of workflows, generic email service providers, but it's not in place. The data is not synchronized. So the key thing is really behavioral tracking, as we do synchronize the data with your online store backend, as well as we track your front end. So it really enables us to automate those marketing activities and do it specifically what's important for e-commerce via the flows, which really, you know, earns money. There's money for online stores.
Here's my theory. Here's one of my theories on why there's so many. You're convincing me and obviously explaining to me the importance of customization for email. The other one is price. People don't spend that much on web hosting. I'll talk in a moment about my sponsor, HostGator. It's like $384, something like that a month. That's peanuts. But email marketing, it's not at all unusual for a company to spend more in 1 month on their email list than it is to spend for a whole year of web hosting, right?
That's correct. But it's still, look, marketing is a piece, email is a piece of marketing. So within the marketing budget, usually paying for a tool, either Thomas and other tools, it's still a very, very small amount. Comparing to the budgets you spent for Facebook, for Google.
Right. Yeah. So you're saying it's more expensive, but still tiny compared to email marketing.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. But, you know, there are different departments, especially if we talk about Logica's companies. So those who pay for servers and those who pay for email service providers, those are different departments. Usually the tech department pays for servers and marketing department pays for ESP. So
that's interesting too, because the marketing department has bigger budget and much more freedom, right?
Might be. You know, and vast majority of those companies, our competitors, they are bootstrap, like a lot of bootstrap companies in this place. And this business is quite profitable. It has good margins in general, and it creates value for customers. So I guess that's the reason why there are so many solutions in the market, and a lot of them work quite well.
I want to get into this. By the way, Greg's in the audience is asking, can we see a demo? You saw one before we officially started recording here today. But you can just go use the software for free. It's one of the few email companies that lets you just go try their software for free and see what it's like.
And we have free demos on our website. So just visit.
Yeah, there's a whole free tier.
And a free tier. And we have demos as well. So you can book a demo with our sales rep. And in half an hour, he will professionally show all the capabilities. So you can do it on our website.
I'm hearing an accent. You're from Lithuania?
That's correct.
You are. Do you grow up there?
Yes, I'm born and raised here and living here.
Oh, you're still in Lithuania?
Yeah, I'm Lithuania. Yeah, I travel a lot, but yeah, this is...
I'm just shocked because you'd be doing it this late. It's 4:15 here in my time. What is it, midnight?
2 a.m.
2 a.m. Oh, my God. Wow. Thanks for doing this. Why are you staying in Lithuania?
That's a good question. I travel a lot. I really love... We have started here, and the vast majority of our team is here, and doing self-service business. That's That's absolutely okay. So I spend a lot of time in London, 2 hours flight, 2 hours flight. So really convenient, 4 flights per day. So really well connected. So I do a lot of business there, and I travel to US a lot. As vast majority of our business is actually coming from the US. More than 60% of our revenue is coming from North America, US, with a little bit of Canada added on top.
John in the Drew in the audience and John are saying because he lives like a king on $5,000 a month. Now that's kind of they're kind of being silly, but there's some truth to that. What I've noticed as I've been traveling around the world watching entrepreneurs is it doesn't cost that much to live outside the US. You get fully connected. You do have to deal with like late night calls like this sometimes, but yeah. Overall the value is enormous, right? For
yeah, that's correct. Yeah, that's correct. That's correct. I mean, there are advantages and disadvantages, and yeah.
Be more specific. What's an advantage about living in Lithuania that we wouldn't know about until we got there?
Like talking about Vilnius, which is the capital city of Lithuania. So this is very tiny city, but you have but it's already capital. So you have all the broad, vibrant things, which you have usually in the capital cities and large cities. I mean, a lot of events, a lot of things happening. A lot of nightlife is great here, and a lot of bars which are open till 6 a.m., etc. But at the same time, after getting out of a bar, it takes you 15 minutes by taxi to go get anywhere.
Okay.
You should not feel asleep. And airport is very tiny, so you just land, touch the ground, and it takes, let's say, myself where I live, it takes me half an hour, and I'm at home. It's not the case in the larger city. So it's very green. It's a lot of nature here, etc. So
what about costs?
A lot of talent. A lot of talent, especially okay. Tech talent. Yeah. So those are upsides. Downsides that we don't have a lot of very experienced people. That's a downside. We have to build a network being in remote. We have not graduated MIT, Harvard, Stanford, etc., where you already have all the connections in place. So you have to create those connections after you have started your business.
What do you pay for a developer? What does a developer cost there?
Oh, it depends, junior to senior, but yeah, it might be gross cost starting from 2,000 going up to 4,000, 5,000.
2,000 to 5,000 a month.
Yeah.
Wow. That's correct. Okay. That gives me a sense of the cost. This is your third attempt at a company. Before we started, I asked you about this one company that I know you launched previous to OmniSend, IQ Polls. I asked you where it was. You said basically it's in maintenance mode. I'm not there day to day. As far as you know, you don't even have day to day insight into what's going on at the company. But you did have insight into why that one didn't take off the way that OmniSend did, and I thought that was interesting to talk about. What is it about this feedback platform that didn't do as well?
Yeah, so IQ Pulse was very kind of interesting startup. I was invited there. I was not the person in whose mind came the original idea, but I have joined as a co-founder there. And the key lesson which I have learned then, I guess all of the founding team have learned there, is really that was a nice to have a product, all the conferences, seminars, all the organizers. If you give it for free, it's a fancy thing. They love using it. But once you ask to pay for it, they say, I'm not sure if I really need it. And so this is the lesson which I really brought to OmniSend, that, it's very important from the very beginning to find a monetizable customer thing. To help customers solve something for which they are willing to pay. If you do not do it from the very beginning, if it's just a vitamin, if it's just a nice to have thing, so customers will not be willing to pay for you. And so might be, raising a lot of money and then making it as an industry standard, and maybe D round or E round investor are going to find a way how to monetize this business. But as we've chosen another path here at OmniSend, so really trying to find the monetizable customer pain from the very beginning.
Monetizable customer pain, that polls are not addressing a pain, and it's not monetizable because people aren't earning money on it. Okay, you were also correct. Working
so conference organizers, they're organizing their conferences, their events, and we were targeting those not online events, but like offline events and like people gathering.
That's what you were doing with IQ polls.
Yeah, that's correct. People gathering in big hall, you know, have a seminar or a big conference, etc., and there is a presenter on the stage and asking the audience feedback live, and IQ polls help to collect this feedback and, you know, show it on big screen and live. Yeah. It's fancy, but it's not the thing you're willing to pay for.
Okay, makes sense. And so you were working at your digital marketing agency, Sounddesk, and I'm guessing what happened was you were working with a lot of e-commerce companies and you were starting to see that there was a problem there?
Absolutely.
Talk about the problem as you experienced it. Do you have an example of it?
Yeah, so back in the days, so we have launched the product, which currently is Omniscient, like 5 years ago. 2 years, we didn't manage to earn any money from it. As you know, to even in this very, very, very competitive and very trivial market as email service, at that point, that was completely like email service providers. So we saw that there is an opportunity and there are specific needs by those who do sell online, but those generic email marketing tools, they do not cover their needs. And
do you have an example of a customer who needed something that you couldn't do? Yeah, what was it?
You know, so back in the days, the automation flows as trivial as like abundant cart reminder or welcome campaign was not that trivial. And those generic email service providers, they did not provide such automations. You were capable to send bulk email campaigns, but not automate anything. So really we saw that, you know, if you want to automate something, you have to do what? You have to code, write your custom code, and then plug into like Mandrill, Mailgun, SendGrid, other like transaction email service provider, and then send emails and have no analytics, no data, no single customer profile. So we saw the opportunity here, our promise at
that. I'm sorry, I don't understand. Let me see if I can back up and get this. You were working with e-commerce companies, but you were specifically working on their marketing. Were you also focusing deeply on email only for them, or were you doing everything? No, you were going beyond email. No. Okay. And so why couldn't you just say, you know what, guys, we're going to use MailChimp. We're just going to go with what's out there. And you did.
Yeah, we did. And we saw that, MailChimp does not fulfill their needs.
Can you give me an example of something that you had to code for them? Do you have an example of something that you did for a client?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, abandoned cart reminder messages.
Abandoned cart. And so how did you create it with Mandrill and your own custom setup?
Yeah, so you just, code a script, intermediate script, and then plug Mandrill as purely transactional service. You create an email, like you pick the data from online store, you have to pick on your own the trigger, you have to pick product. Like product data, images, price, names, et cetera, put it in a template and give it to Mandrill just to send it over.
Oh, and you would custom create this for your clients. Exactly. You'd have developers do that for your clients.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow, okay.
Because back in the days, there were no tools affordable for small businesses who have been doing this. There were great solutions as like responses at the time, ExactTarget, SilverPop, those enterprise level solutions. They were doing it, but there were no small and medium business solutions who were doing that.
Got it. All right. And so you were coding this up for people.
Things have changed.
And we're not talking that long ago. I think you started that company in 2012, right? That's when you created Sounddesk? Earlier, 2009. Cool.
Yeah, the agency. Yeah, it was 2010, I guess, something.
I think part of my confusion as I'm looking it over is I'm looking at Sounddesk.com, but before that you had Sounddesk.it, am I right? Or LT?
Yeah, LT. Yeah, it was local. Yeah. None of the websites exist anymore. So.
Oh, no, Internet Archive, baby. It's taking me back. I'm going in the Wayback Machine. I see what things were like. All right. And so as you were building this thing up, you saw this is a problem. Did you start coding up a solution at Sounddesk at your agency?
Yes.
You did.
That's actually the pure spin-off from the agency. So vast majority of the team, is big enough now, but the core of the team, those are guys who were together with myself back in the days of agency. And it's very important. It's very important. Once you start a startup, it's one of the lessons I have learned here. But, you know, having a team in the place already and have kind of cultural fit already and not wasting and spending a lot of time to find like new founders, to find new people to work with you. That was very, very beneficial for us, as well as kind of some lessons learned while building IQPol. So the core of the team was the same with which we already failed while building IQPol.
Let me take a moment to talk about my first sponsor, and then we'll get into the first version of the software. Whether it was a standalone product or part of your agency, doesn't matter. We'll just see what that first version was and how you got your first customers. But my first sponsor is a company called HostGator. Now, listen, I know you guys work a lot with Shopify. Let's talk about HostGator as an e-commerce platform. What's an advantage for somebody who goes and gets a HostGator account and says, you know what, I'm not going to create a WordPress blog. I'll create a WooCommerce online store. I know that some of the advantages with Shopify are that there are more plugins, that there are more features directly for e-commerce. What advantages do you see with WooCommerce as a free installation on a service like HostGator? I know one. You want me to go first? You do? Okay. All right. Here's one of the big advantages. One of the big advantages is easy to start for free, essentially, right? You're paying for hosting, but to start for free, to play around with it, see what works. And then if you don't like it, you dump it and move on. The cost of WooCommerce is super low. The flexibility to do whatever you want is really incredible, right? We're seeing with other platforms, if it's hosted by someone else, there's a chance that they take it away. There's a chance that they say what you're doing is not right. And I'm not just talking about clear hate speech, but we're seeing examples of people who are selling things that, let's say, what is it, CBD or whatever that is, that's part of like connected to marijuana in some way. I don't even know what the connection is, but there are people who create products with that and then suddenly see that their store's closed. You have WooCommerce, no issue with it. You create it, you keep going. Another thing is create as many stores as you want. It's all WordPress plus one plugin, which is a WooCommerce plugin. And does it integrate with Omnisend? You bet it does, right? Yes.
It does.
I see you're kind of being mum. It's almost like you don't want to say that it's better than Shopify. I'm not going to take a position and say one is better than the other. Is that why you're being mum?
No, sorry. I just was reading comments and
from people
you were addressing. Yeah, I was focused on
from the live audience. All right, I'll let you. Good. I'm glad you're talking to them. Feel free to type into them. So I'm going to tell you guys, if you're listening to me, whether you have an idea for some kind of online store or an idea for a blog or an idea for just a web page that will just be your landing page to represent your idea to the world, if you bring it to hostgator.com/mixergy, you will get an incredibly low price, almost to the point where you go, how the hell could these freaking guys afford to do it? Here's how. Number one, they own just about every hosting platform out there. Number two, with HostGator, once you grow, they're going to offer you other services, and that's where they're going to make money on you. I don't believe they're really making serious money on you guys when you get started with them. I think as you grow, then that's where the opportunity comes for them. HostGator.com/Mixergy, super inexpensive and super effective. I'm really happy with them. Look at this. Drew is saying Learn to Code is banned from Facebook. Really? I had no idea. Yeah, it's like random stuff is now getting banned all of a sudden. First version was what?
Why is it so? I'm not sure.
I don't know what Learn to Code is. Why would Learn to Code get banned for considered hate speech? Really?
So strange.
That is strange. That's unexpected. I've heard about certain coding sites being banned because it's kind of technically hacking, even though it's not really.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking it up.
Yeah.
I've never seen. I didn't see anything like this. I can't verify.
There was a question if Omnisend is affiliate friendly. So Mailchimp hates affiliates. So we do love affiliates. Those who
bring,
customers for us. We do have affiliate program as well in place. So I guess that was a question.
Yeah. By the way, I looked it up. I had to do some research on it. It turns out it's not Learn to Code being banned by Facebook. Being banned by Twitter. Go figure. What is this? According to Reason Magazine, yes, you can get kicked off of Twitter for saying Learn to Code. I got to dig deeper into this. This is kind of a weird thing.
Learn to Code. Wow, that's so strange.
Apparently, it's part of a meme that then probably someone has taken over.
Because learning to code, it's really a big trend, and it's in Lithuania, it's global. But people see that developers are those who kind of do earn a lot comparing to other folks in your market. So we see the trend that, you know, those at the age of like 30, 40, they change their career path and they do join like coding schools. They spend like half a year and learning some basics, and they join some companies as like junior developers. Yeah, to start, you know, working and increasing their skill set there, growing their skill set there.
Sorry, I'm a little distracted by this learn to code thing. Here's what it is. Apparently, people are mocking journalists online who get fired by throwing their old headlines back in their faces about learn to code. It's like, so now they're saying to them, if they're laid off, learn to code. And Drew in the chat is saying the people are throwing the phrase learn to code even at like Uber drivers who are suffering. So if you suffer and someone says learn to code, it's their way of just being snarky at you. And that's why learn to code can actually cause trouble. Okay. Type of harassment. Right. Got it.
That's a story. There should be a story behind everything.
That is. I got to put that stuff away. So the first version of the software looked like what? Was it an internal tool that you just use yourselves?
Yes. It was the very first. We built it for a few customers of ours, so it's like agency customers, existing customers. So that was a creep. Right now I can say it. A crap, not creep.
Sorry. You actually told our producer, look, I honestly can't believe people paid for it. Why? What did it have in it? That's actually a great move, right? You want to launch when it's that way, but why?
There was nothing bad. It just was so MVP.
What did it have in it?
So it had the capability to send like bulk email campaigns with so limited capabilities to build a beautiful email and a very, very few basic automations. And I would say user experience was not the best, and the interface by itself. And it was sometimes clunky, and some of the buttons, they didn't work.
People can't see it. You are smirking so much as you're talking. It's like such a, oh,
No, but that's the way you should, I guess, build all the.
But yeah, so to understand why that, what is it that made people want it despite all of these flaws? That's the heart of the lesson here. What was it? You tell me.
That was automation.
The automation.
Flows, yeah, especially made for e-commerce specifically.
The shopping cart abandonment.
Yeah. Order follow-ups. Like welcome campaigns, but not just sending hey campaign, but adding products to your welcome emails and really trying to convert your customers, like visitors or those who subscribers into paying customers. And data, as we from the very, very beginning, we have started synchronizing the data with your online store. That means that you can create a segment based on some behavioral. Again, it was very, very basic set back in the days, but it worked. So that was the reason our customers were paying for us even then. Then we had just an MVP version.
Were you selling initially to your consulting clients?
Yes.
Yeah. You did. Got it. So you went to them and you said, look, the stuff that I know that you wanted to do, you can do with the software. They started buying. By the way, as you're smiling and I'm pointing it out, John in the chat is saying, good for him. I'm so happy for him. Since this is a huge win, it's only going to get better. So, and then Drew is saying, what percentage of your sales come from cart abandonment right now? Your sales increases. It seems like that's the big one.
Yeah, it is. So it really depends on your business, and we do have a lot of statistics. You can find it on our blog, and we do have a lot. So it really depends on the business. I cannot come up with like an average number now.
Okay.
But yeah, you can check on our blog. We do have a lot of researches, and we do publish a lot of data about all the statistics. So including cart abandonment.
You told our producer, look, one of the first things that we try to do was get into the online platforms like Shopify, because they kick in customers to you, right?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah, so at the beginning, so first, our first customers were our agency customers. Then we start like looking broad, and where can we bring our product? To whom can we bring our product? So the first platform, and we saw, okay, there are those platforms who they have app stores or add-on stores or plugin stores, or they call those. And the first platform we have integrated with was Ticktail. I'm not sure if you're familiar with.
No, what is it?
Yeah, so it's like, unfortunately, it has been like, you know, acquired, but it was fire acquisition, something like this, by Shopify. half a year ago. So that was a Swedish European startup. Again, at that time, that was very successful and people were estimating them as a great success, and then comparing them with Spotify, which is a Swedish company as well. And then they're doing very well. They wanted to liberalize e-commerce and bring to everyone like super easy to use solution where you can just start your online store with your Facebook account in like 10 minutes and no need to code anything. There is no even the need to pick a template. So with Shopify, you need, let's say, 4 hours, probably 6 hours to properly set up a store. With Ticktail, it took you half an hour to set up a very basic version of the store. And they were growing really as crazy. So we saw the opportunity there, and we have made an integration with Ticktail. Shopify was the second platform we have made an integration. Then followed by BigCommerce, Magento, PrestaShop, other platforms, WooCommerce, which you have been mentioning here. So, I mean, there are different platforms which really are great in different occasions and can serve different kind of customers very well. So I don't really prefer none of those platforms, and it depends on your needs.
Because what happens is people who have a Shopify store will go into the Shopify plugin section, or what do they call it? The Shopify
App Store.
Just like I go into my iPhone's App Store and just see what's new, and they are willing to install it. They know that they have to pay through Shopify, or they could pay through Shopify, right? But it's not required. So it's easy billing. Am I right about this?
Yeah, that's correct. Yeah. And yeah, so those app stores, it's one thing, it's just app stores where people are exploring and looking for different solutions. And another thing is really those platforms, we do have ecosystems. We do have agencies working for specifically with a platform and for the platform customers and selling, let's say, Shopify customers, Shopify agencies, Magento agencies as well. So those are kind of rather closed communities. I mean, they're open, you can enter those easily, but those communities and those ecosystem exist. So a part of just being listed on the App Store, we do a lot of SEO, we do a lot of cross-marketing activities with other service providers there, we do cooperate with agencies within the ecosystem, et cetera. So that's what really helps us to acquire new customers.
And so one of the first things you said was, look, if we're going to be getting our customers from those app stores, we need to find a way to rank higher. And so you were looking for ways to get people who liked your software to go and give reviews, to increase your search result placement in the app stores. What worked for you for getting people to leave reviews?
Asking.
Just asking anyone who's on it.
Just asking.
Was there a time when you did it? Were you personally doing it?
No, that was a time at the beginning I was personally doing that because we didn't have a team and there were no support people there. So everyone was doing everything. When we have started, I guess with 8 of us, yeah. Then we just made a decision to ditch the agency and then really focus on the product solely. So at that time we were 8. So everybody was doing everything. So asking people for a review, if you see that the customer is really happy with your solution, so just ask. And, that's so strange that a lot of businesses, they are not asking for good reviews. And
I never do. You know what? I know that in the iPhone or iTunes, what is it called? The podcast app now on the iPhone. Mm-hmm. If I get reviews, it does me well. I just feel like, why am I going to waste people's time asking them to do something nice for me? And so I never ask. I always see people as selfish, and I want to appeal to their selfishness in a good way. I feel like, if there's nothing in it for Drew who's listening right now, why should he even bother? But as a result, I don't ask for it. That's a mistake.
Yeah, you should do that.
I should ask them.
Yeah, you should ask, because it's a very basic psychology thing. I mean, let's say, very, very trivial situation in life. I mean, you just dropped something on the ground. They're going to be very kind people who will help you without asking. But there will be people who just will be looking at the situation and they will not willing to help you proactively. But if you would ask, just very, very few people would say, no, come on, I will not help you. Because it's very basic psychology.
Is it asking one-on-one?
It doesn't matter.
Ask in my whole email list. Ask here within the podcast. Ask. Just keep asking. Rate and review.
Yeah, just keep asking. And okay, so in our case, we needed to nail up a process and to find the exact moment when it's the best moment to ask for a review. So it's in our case, it's the best moments are it's like after a support ticket has been closed.
Yep.
So that means that they were in more kind of personal conversation with us. It's one thing. Another thing, we do have NPS surveys. So if someone is rating us very good, so we already know that you are happy with our solution. So we ask to leave a public review as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, another point is when someone completes something, let's say in your case, as you do podcasts. So if you somehow manage to find a way to ask exactly after a podcast. So in our case, when someone sets up either automated campaign or completes a bulk campaign, so this is the best moment to ask again, because the person feels relieved. Okay, I'm done with my job. I have some free time. So that's okay for me spending minutes. If you keep pop-ups, let's say appearing while I'm in the middle of the process, which is the most important for me now. So of course I'm going to be intrusive and going to, close it and say, okay, what are those guys doing here? So finding a good moment is important as well.
That makes sense. Drew in the chat. Drew is basically doing his own little podcast in the chat. I can't stop watching what he's chatting along. For those of you who don't know, I'm doing a day of live interviews here, recording them for our podcast, and we'll be publishing it. And Drew is one of the people who's listening. John is the other one who's super active here. Drew is asking about calls. I know that from your conversation with our producer here at Mixer G, that you guys decided we are going to work on our NPS, our Net Promoter Score. And one of the things that you decided to do was get on more calls and do in-person meetings. How did you do that? And what were the results?
Yeah, so at the early days, it was very important for us to really start meeting our customers in person. So that was really done by me. So I just, I kept writing emails and inviting our already existing customers to meet in person, and preferably me visiting there in their working environment to really understand how do they live, how do they work, whatever.
You would just ask them. You'd say, "Hey, I see that you're one of my customers. Can I come into your office?"
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, all right.
That's correct. Yeah, because I wouldn't
have to be where you are.
Sorry.
What city does it have to be in? Does it have to be in your city? Does it have to be in
Lithuania? No.
Anywhere.
Anyway, I was traveling a lot, and mainly it was London. I used to live in London for a while, so I was there, and then mainly it was London, and then in some US cities as well. Just I was traveling then, trying to arrange as many meetings as I can to really understand how do our customers live. How can we help them, and what is the real feedback about the tool? Once you talk in person, the feedback you receive is completely different comparing to just NPS scoring or just some public reviews.
So what would you do? You would go through your customer list, see who is using it a lot, who is using the software a lot. Am I right? And then say, this person happens to be in London. I'll ask if I could come to their office.
Yes, that's correct.
Interesting. And you would do it on the phone.
Yes, and on the phone and via email, etc. So on, what I have learned, especially those smaller online retailers, is at the very beginning we are focusing on those micro to small businesses, like online entrepreneurs who usually are on their own or small teams of 2-3 people there. So what I found there that. Just very few of them wanted to let me into their offices.
Really? Why?
Because usually for those beginners, your office is your sleeping room. Your warehouse, if you sell online, so usually you need to have some warehouse. So your warehouse is just, in front of your sleeping bed. So
it's so personal.
Yeah, it's very personal. So FFY was arranging meetings in some cafes, etc. And once we have started growing, so the customers became large as well. And now it's very good occasions to meet customers in various trade show conferences, which are related to e-commerce, digital marketing, etc. So you start meeting your existing customers, you meet your prospects there, and it's a great opportunity to meet and talk to them there.
So I want to know what you learned by being in somebody's home in the early days and getting on calls with them. But let me first take a moment to talk about my second sponsor, then we'll get into it. My second sponsor actually picked up on something you picked up on, which is they're phenomenal developers who don't live in San Francisco, who don't live in Silicon Valley. They just live wherever they happen to grow up or wherever they happen to enjoy. Lithuania, Bali, all over the place. And so what they decided to do was assemble a collection of those developers into their network, make it really hard for people to get in their network. But if they got in their network, they knew they were the best of the best, and make them available to companies like yours. So if you need to hire someone, like imagine this, Ritas, if you say, you know, we need a mobile app, but our team never developed a mobile app. Yeah, you can start waiting and teaching and so on. Or you can say, you know, TopTal, we're an email service provider. We need a mobile app. It has to be iPhone first and then Android. We want somebody who built both and has created one for an email service provider. Find it for us. And they'll go to the network and they'll find people who created apps that will blow you away. And then you can talk to those developers. If you like them, you can hire them. If you don't like them, nothing lost. If you hire them, you can have them build the first version and then introduce it to your developers and have your developers just take it over. Or if you like the developers from TopTal, you keep them forever. Or you can say, you know what? People aren't sending email marketing from their phones yet. We've learned a lot. We haven't distracted our team. Sorry, TopTal. We're done with this. And go on. No loss. All right. So if you want that idea or anything else, anyone who's listening to me already probably knows by now that what they need to do is go to TopTal. Top is in top of your head. Tal is in talent. That's TOPTAL.com/Mixergy. When you throw that /Mixergy at the end, you get 80 hours of TopTal developer credit when you pay for your first 80 hours. In addition to a no-risk trial period, I'm actually doing all that from memory, and my memory is bad, which shows you how much I've been talking about TopTal. TopTal.com/Mixergy. By the way, I was in Bali. This woman says, I work for TopTal. I said, great. We went over. We talked about her life. She's living in Bali because TopTal believes people should live wherever they want. I said, doesn't it drive you nuts to work late hours? She said, no. Nope. And I live in Bali. I'm okay with that. My name was Steph. Wonderful.
It's too hot, I guess, during the daytime. So working late.
No. Maybe that's what it is. But maybe that's what it is. You're right. Maybe during the day she doesn't want to be stuck in an office. I would prefer to work during the day, but some people don't care. Some people just want to go enjoy their day, and then at the end of the day, sure, do a little bit of work, a lot of work actually.
Yeah, work.
So tell me, what did you learn by going into somebody's office?
So I see there is a question from Drew. So yeah, definitely I will address what I did they learn, but he's asking, so it's about the same topic. So did I interview people who don't like our service? For sure. That's very important, including those customers who have churned and who have left.
Oh, you want to talk to people who canceled?
Yeah, of
okay.
course.
It's all right. Yeah.
You want to learn the reasons why did people cancel? So what was wrong with your solution? What was wrong with your service, et cetera, et cetera? Otherwise, you cannot improve. No, so it's very important to improve the things which you are good at, but at the same time, you have to fix what's broken as well, because there's something broken all the times. I mean, while you're building a company, while you're building especially startup, and especially in the early days, so not everything really works perfect. So talking to canceled customers, talking to those customers who left like one at NPS, it's very, very important.
So what did you learn from talking to people who left one net promoter score or something else?
So usually they were dissatisfied with like certain features, like very basic things that were missing on the product. So that really helped us to prioritize development and really improve the quality of the product and build our roadmap accordingly. So feedback, which is coming like from existing customers as well, from churn customers as well, from prospective customers, we do aggregate all of this feedback into one feedback loop, and it really helps to build a proper roadmap for technical development. So that's the main thing what you can learn. And
wait, do you have a specific example of something that you didn't realize you needed to change, and because you talked to someone who canceled, you changed it?
Yeah. So let's say segmentation, rules of segmentation. Yeah. So we do have segmentation in place. That's fine. You know, and there is a customer canceling and marking that I'm unhappy with your segmentation. Come on, we do have segmentation. So what's wrong with segmentation?
Yeah.
And then there's one specific use case, let's say, which does not satisfy customers' needs. And then you think about there might be a lot of customers which might be exactly the same, might have exactly the same need, and you develop that. And you know.
So what's the segmentation that they needed that you didn't have? Because I know segmentation and targeting is one of the first features you created.
Yeah, absolutely. But let's say, you know, advanced segmentation, website behavioral segmentation.
Segment based on what someone's done on the website, not what they bought.
One example. Yeah. They have visited that specific category on my online store and they have not completed the purchase. So we didn't have it at the beginning. Let's say.
I wouldn't have thought that people actually would use that. It feels like a smart feature that no one's going to use, but you're saying they needed it so badly that they were willing to leave over it?
Some of the customers, especially the larger ones, yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. For marketers, for like advanced marketers, is very, very important. As you know, based on web behavior, you can do a lot of triggers and target a lot based on their behavior, your customer's behavior on site.
I don't know how these fans are. You and I are both getting distracted by the freaking chat. I should just turn the chat off, but it's good. So Sohan actually went out and found the data on your site. 46.1% of people who get cart abandonment emails open them. So about half, if you send out an email to somebody who added something to their shopping cart but didn't complete it, about half of them will open. Then let's look at clicks. 13.3% of them will click on this thing. And then of the people who click, about a third, 35%, will end up buying.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's the data that you got. That's so hard found.
Statistics, you know. As I said, we do a lot of infographics and you know a lot of data. Yeah,
currently. But this doesn't come from your data. This comes from Sales Cycle. This is a research company.
No. It comes from us.
It's from you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, all the infographics, etc. So we do have already. A lot of customers in place and a lot of campaigns and millions, hundreds of millions emails being sent every month. So we do have a lot of data.
Okay. So the first batch was, hey, let's go to these people who are into our software and ask them to go review it. The second thing that you did was you went to these online ratings and review sites, G2 Crowd, Capterra, and you went and you started asking people to review you there. Am I right?
Mm-hmm. That's correct.
And again, you did the same thing. When someone was interested in your software or said something nice, you'd ask them to go to Capterra and leave a review.
That's correct. Just keep asking. Keep asking, and people do that. Yeah, and on some of those sites, you are allowed to give incentives. I mean, you are not allowed to give incentives for good reviews, but just for reviewing. So if you are... If you are aware that self-confident about your product, as vast majority of your customers really get a good experience about your product and they like your product, your service, which is very important as well, like support, etc. So, of course, you confidently ask for reviews and you can give incentive. Let's say, I have a $10 Amazon voucher or let's say $30 off for next month for Omnisend services.
So you did that. You offered people that.
Yeah.
All they had to do was just go review. Not necessarily a good review.
It depends. For G2, for Capterra, you're allowed to do that. For Shopify, you are not allowed to give any incentives. So of course you follow the rules of a review site. But yeah, if they do allow you, and in case of G2 and Capterra, they to incentivize on their own as well. So if you are going on their paid plan, so they give you kind of 100 of 1,000, I don't remember exact number of Amazon vouchers, which you can distribute to your existing customers.
You have to pay them to be on their platform?
To get premium services.
Got it.
It's for free for the beginning, but if you want to get more leads, to be more visible, to get like a better profile there. So yeah, they do have premium services there.
That's their business plan. And then if you pay for that, they even give you stuff that you can give as an incentive to get people to come and review on their platform.
Yeah, that's correct.
Interesting. Okay. I've interviewed a few companies who do this, and the whole business model is just so like, I can't believe they could get away with it, because they make money from leads. They get paid for promoting certain people, but it's acceptable in this space. I'm not going to ask you to say anything negative or positive about it because you do business with them. I'm not going to get anything from it. What about phone calls? When you talk to customers, what happened? How did that help you?
Yes, so it's really better to better understand what are their expectations from the tool. You know, because you as a founder, you have an idea and you start building a product, and you have a lot of ideas in your head, and you start delivering it, and you think that okay, come on, that's a great thing what I've done. But sometimes your customers may think differently. It doesn't mean that they don't want the things you have built, but maybe in some occasions they want something a little bit different. And even
let me get more specific. Here's the problem that I had. I was hearing a lot of people in my interview say, call up your customers. So I start to call them. My freaking people are not picking up the phone. You call, they don't pick up, right? So then what I did was, what did you do?
You have to schedule. You have to ask for that. Yeah, so not all of you. Yeah, not all of your customers are gonna talk to you.
There's not an incentive for them to take the call when they schedule. So they schedule. I live by my calendar. Not everyone else does. And even if they do, they might have other things to do instead of coming and helping Andrew. So they wouldn't do it. Here's the one thing that helped me get people on the phone. It's you signed up or you wanted to sign up. You wanted something. I ask someone on my team to do this. Andrew wants you to get the results you signed up for. He will be there on a call to help you for free, or he will Zoom with you to do consulting to make sure you get the result that you wanted. So whatever it is that they're trying to do, Andrew is going to call you to make sure you get that. And what that means is I get to hear the problem that they came to my site with. I get to help them work through it together. And that teaches me. And then I could say, by the way, I saw that you signed up on the site. Did the site help you do this? Why didn't it help you do it? How could I help you more? But just calling them up doesn't work. Scheduling doesn't work. I will do consulting to make sure you get the thing that you wanted. Boom, opened everything up. Do you have any tips like that?
Yeah. So we're currently doing that a lot for our larger customers. So we do have account managers in place. And once we see that the larger customer took a self-service path and onboarded and have synchronized or imported a lot of subscribers in their list. So we do proactively offer help to really properly set up and properly onboard the customer. So again, currently it's a huge source for feedback. I mean, from there. So that was not the case back in the early days, but now it's a huge source of
the people who are paying you more expect more service, and that's great for them, but it's also good for you to see what they're using, what they're trying to do. Yeah.
Exactly. It's good for us to help them to benefit from Omniscient. You know, cuz you know, the more we benefit, the more we benefit. That's basic, you know, because our key goal to help them to get very positive ROI, you know, from Omniscient. So therefore we offer initial setup help.
Drew is saying that he incentivizes people to give Yelp reviews, but Yelp doesn't allow it. From what I understand, Yelp, unlike other platforms, doesn't allow any incentives. Think you're violating the rules.
I'm not sure about Yelp. We don't work with Yelp.
What works for you now? Is it SEO and brand awareness? Is that the next thing for growth?
Yeah, SEO, brand awareness, and as we call it, like targeted brand awareness. So to go just and be very recognizable brand in very a broad audience, it's extremely expensive and it takes a lot of time. So we do target specific, as I have already mentioned, that there are Shopify ecosystem, Magento ecosystem, WooCommerce ecosystem. So we do target those ecosystems with our brand awareness activities and SEO activities and various listings and the same review sites. They do bring leads as well, and offline activities like trade shows and the events.
I saw you on Twitter with a photo at a Shopify conference. I guess you're there. And so you guys have a booth there too?
In Shopify conference, in this case, it's more kind of developers and then tech partners conference. In this conference, there are no booths and there are no merchants and no marketers. So, but yeah, it's good to really to make some cooperations with other tech partners to do cross promo with them, to make some integrations, which is very important to really bring a seamless experience for the customers. If, let's say, they have some loyalty solution in place and it's integrated with Omnisend, so it's much better to them to use those two tools, as those two tools synchronize the data, initiate unique triggers and some unique campaigns. So let's say loyalty campaign, when somebody buys something, you just not only send pure transaction email saying thank you for your purchase, but you say thank you for your purchase and here are your loyalty points. You have earned 200 extra loyalty points, your current loyalty points. Statistics is as follows. If you want to learn more, go to that loyalty solution. So it's good. And yeah, we have attended RSC in Chicago. It's a huge internet retail and offline. Now that was the first year combined online and offline retail in one place. A huge trade show. We had a booth there. So meeting prospective customers as well as existing customers, as well as agency partners, etc.
So I'm guessing being on this podcast is part of the branding also. That's why you'd be up at past midnight. Has it been helpful to be on podcast? To do podcasts in general?
Yeah, I guess so. That's very difficult to evaluate. What we see that our brand awareness is really growing a lot. So that means that this is a combination of all activities you're taking place in. So SEO, podcast recording, some courses, offline activities, listings, etc. So all combined, it does work. So it's very difficult to attribute specific lead or specific, increased brand awareness point. But as long as all the combination works, so we are happy to proceed with that. And of course, adding more and more on top.
More and more top?
Yeah, I mean, so how we do work, we find new channels which we think that work, or we have a proof that works, and then it takes you more time to nail things, and then you put it on the pilot, and then you go after new channels or new methods for customer acquisition and brand awareness, etc.
That makes sense. And you have someone who does that for you now, and I'm imagining you started it on your own?
Yeah, that's correct. Now we have a marketing, sales and marketing team. 7 people, yeah.
Oh, wow. You guys profitable?
Yes, we are.
All right. Drew, let me close it out with questions from the audience that I didn't get to. Drew is asking, he's asked several times, how long does it take you to break even on a new customer?
Around 3 months.
3 months, wow. John is saying, how do I reach him directly to talk about helping him with his brand awareness? What's a good way for him to reach you?
Email. Yeah, RYTIS at omnisend.com.
All right.
Or LinkedIn. I love LinkedIn as well.
You do use LinkedIn messages? You actually accept them and respond?
Yeah, I do.
It's so many there.
Yeah, LinkedIn is my most preferred social network. So yeah, it depends on the content of the message. So if I'm not interested, I'm not responding. But if I'm interested, and I do communicate with people on LinkedIn, I mean, really directly.
I think I just get so many solicitations. Andrew, thank you for adding me on here. Now here are 15 paragraphs explaining why you should do business with me. But
I signed up. Yeah, I do get those as well. Yeah. So I do ignore those, but yeah, as I use it for my daily activities, so I do need to filter.
All right. The website for anyone who wants to go check it out is omnisend.com. I want to thank the two sponsors who made this interview happen. The first will host your website, right? It's called HostGator. Yeah, you can do e-commerce. You can do blog. You can do so many other things with them really inexpensively. HostGator.com/Mixergy will give you the lowest prices out there. The second, if you're looking to hire a developer, go to toptal.com/Mixergy. Don't mess around. They really are the best. And if you're not happy, they will not charge you. But don't worry, they'll still pay the developers because they're mensches. And finally, I've got to tell you this, Ritas, and everyone else, I am incredibly proud of what we're doing with Mixergy Premium, where I bring in entrepreneurs who are phenomenal at one thing to teach a course on that one thing. people who I've interviewed, people who the audience admires, they come back on and they teach courses. If you're interested in checking this out, and yes, you will be supporting Mixergy by doing it, I urge you to go and sign up for Mixergy Premium. Go to mixergypremium.com. Or if you want to see a list of these courses, go to mixergy.com/courses. And for everyone who's been a part of Mixergy Premium, thank you. We've got a big team here. Let's make sure that Redis is scheduled, that I have a cell phone number in case of an emergency, that we've got research on him. And it's all thanks to Mixergy Premium members who've been supporting for so long. So thank you guys. Redis, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Andrew. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Same here. All right. Good night. Bye.